This is Patsy with a Z, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Kendare, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Kendare Blake. Hi, Kendare.
Hi.
I got
it's
it right?
Kendara, but it's fine. What? Not quite. It's Kendara.
Kendara, but it's spelled with an E at the end. Is it spelled with an E at the end? Did I get
it?
Yeah. Okay, Kendara. That's a beautiful name. I love that name.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Kendara Blake, you have to tell us about this wonderful series that you've written, and it's so fascinating. I was just recently talking to a writing coach, and she was talking about how important it is if you are going to build a world for your characters, how important it is to really know your world. And I tell you, you are some world builder. I don't know where all of this came from, but your series, the Three Dark Crowns, and the entire story about queens and I mean, you have created a complete world. So tell us about where this idea came out and about the new book.
Sure, yeah. So Stones is a series set on a matriarchal island on which you can have a number of different magical gifts. And this island is ruled by a queen. And in every generation, the queen gives birth to a set of triplet baby girls. And each has a different one of the magical gifts. They're all equal queens in their own right. But unfortunately for them, when they turn 16, they essentially have a year to murder the crap out of each other to find out who gets to be the new crowned queen.
That was a sort of a... I thought, whoa, okay.
It's a little Game of Thronesy. It's very fantastical. The different magical gifts on the island, one is, you know, naturalist, so they can control animals and they can make things grow. There are poisoners who are immune to all poisons and really like poisoning people. So it was just a lot of fun to play within those different cultures because each magical gift has its own city, and each city, you know, they have their own culture and their own tradition and their own traits. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, the new book is called Five Dark Fates, and it's the final story, right? The final in this
that's
series.
That's the last book. So it's book number 4.
Yeah, number 4. And so you've taken this story really through a very fascinating path as it's developed. And I thought when I got the first one, I thought this is some weird idea. But then you are really great at developing the characters and telling us sort of drawing us into this world that you've created. So I think you've done a great job with this series.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the idea came from queen bees. Yep. Queen bees.
Queen bees.
I saw a ball of bees I was at a book event and there was like a ball made out of bees.
Uh-huh.
And I was afraid of it, but there happened to be a beekeeper there, and she told me a bunch of stuff about bees. And amongst other things, she said that before a queen bee leaves her hive, she lays 4 or 5 baby queen eggs, and when they hatch out, they kill each other to find out who gets to be queen of the old hive. So I just wanted to do that to people, and that's when I started working on the book. So
okay.
The whole world comes from... Nature.
Okay, and they do have different. We'll call them talents, I guess. The talents are different abilities. So I do get the feeling as you are going through the story that you're having fun making up all of this. So the entire community and the characters.
Yeah. It was definitely fun to wander around the island and learn new things about it. I don't have a ton of world building figured out in advance. I kind of have the basics, and then I just throw myself in there as if I'm like a tourist, you know, looking around and learning things. So, for instance, two of the cities, the city of the warriors, who have the gift of, like, excellent battle skills and moving weaponry with their minds, and the city of the oracles, who are sight-gifted, they have, like, the gift of prophecy, and they're good fortune tellers. I didn't get to explore that until like book three. So I'm glad that the series was extended from 2 to 4 books, because I didn't get to know any of that, and I never would have if not for having written the third book, Two Dark Reigns.
And it's fun when the character, once you develop characters and they become alive to you, it's amazing how the path that they can take you on.
Oh yeah, they just do their own thing. That's half the fun of writing a book for me, is I always start with characters and a concept and a situation, and I just want to throw them in a room together and see who comes out.
Now, you grew up in Minnesota?
I did,
yeah. In a small town.
Yep. Hour north of the Twin Cities, maybe 8,000 people.
Yeah, I actually think I was there, because I was born in the Upper Peninsula, and I'm a Youper.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. every once in a while, we'd head out into the bigger cities, you know, because, you know, every place in Upper Peninsula is so small. But I think it was a great thing to grow up in a small town, and we had lots of fun, just being able sort of to be free and to read and to have a great imagination.
Yeah, I've driven through the Upper Peninsula. It's very pretty up there.
Oh,
and a lot of meat pasties.
Oh, yeah, pasties. We make them
pasties.
We make pasties. Oh boy,
pasties.
That's what we're famous for up there.
Yes. Everywhere we stopped, I could get a different one. It was great.
They are wonderful, and of course, for me, when I'm hearing the name Cambridge, when I was young, I was a big reader, of course. I've been reading since I was born, practically. And I was always interested in England because of Jane Austen. And so I remember the name Cambridge all the time. I mean, I wanted to go to Cambridge. I wanted to go to Oxford. I wanted to go to Eton. I wanted to do all of that. And it wasn't until I was 21 that I actually moved to England, because I wanted to live near where Jane Austen was born. So,
cool.
When I saw that you were from Cambridge, I thought, oh, that's cool. It's nice you can say that to people. But you studied in England too, right?
I did, and we visited Cambridge because it was only like a 45-minute train ride away from London.
Yeah,
my flatmate and I went and spent the day there, and it, you know, I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Oh, isn't
like straight out of, you know, yeah. Yeah, everything's so old.
Everything's, yeah.
America's great, but nothing is as old as stuff is over there.
Oh,
really,
no. Both Cambridge and Oxford, they are such wonderful places to go. And for me, I lived in England quite a few years. The best thing for me was there were so many old bookstores, you know, because people read books over there. And so I had to ship a container. a real container. You know, one of those containers you see on the ships. I had a container of books.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because at one point I had over 6,000 books. So you can imagine
had a container of your own.
Yeah. But I think one of the things is, you know, I think having this experience of both the small town and living in England, that's all comes into your work too, that you have a vivid imagination.
Yeah, and I think everywhere that you live or everywhere that you travel to kind of informs itself somehow. You learn a little something, or you see a little something cool, and it might inspire you to put something like it into your work.
Now, altogether, how many years did you work on the series?
On the series? I got the idea in the spring of 2013, but I didn't start actively writing it until about a year and a half later. So, let's say fall of 2014 until June of this year.
Yeah. Wow, it's fun, isn't it, to have something like that? But do you feel the loss now that it's over? Are you like, whew.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm really depressed.
Well, and I'm sure you also hear from your fans that it's so funny. Fans are so delightful when they really like a series, and I've had fans come up to me and say, "She finished this series. I don't want her to finish this series." I had one fan come up to me and say, "Could you tell her to start her series again?" Okay, I don't think so. You know, sometimes they go, but there's going to be something new, and I'm sure you're working already on something new and exciting.
Yeah, we don't get the opportunity to reboot ourselves. That'd be fun, maybe, occasionally, so we don't really have the chance to do that. Yeah, it's been really fun to, you know, get to meet readers of this series. I've been on tour for it every single year, and each time, you know, the readership has grown, and this last time, there were so many great, you know, cosplayers came dressed up as the characters, and they go to such detail, and they have such amazing costume work, and that's always fun, yeah.
So well, that's such a compliment to an author when the fans become so involved in the story and caring so much about the characters, and they have favorites. And boy, you know, I'm sure that some of the people, you know, I can't give away the ending. So there no one's any spoilers, but I'm not sure it ended the way I expected originally. I think I had a different ending, but I mean it works. But I just, you know, everybody has their idea how you want it to end, and so it's you get that. Do you get that kind of thing from your fans?
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about this series is nobody had the same favorite queen or favorite character. I realized that, you know, towards One Dark Throne is. I thought there might be a clear front runner, but there really wasn't. The fandom was equally split between the three sister queens. And so, you know, I realized, well, you know, somebody's got to win, and two-thirds of you are going to be real mad.
And it's true. It's funny how you do sort of, I suppose there's a psychological analysis can be made. Some psychologists will take the three queens and they'll say, which one do you, you know, they'll have them, their patients read the stories and say, okay, now, which one do you like? And they'll analyze you based on that. They'll say, oh, okay, so you have this personality. Because, you know, Fenburn is as I said, you've created a world where there's a specific look and a feel for it, and then each of the queens. What do you think? Tell us about them, and how do you describe their personalities?
So the three queens in this particular generation, the oldest triplet is Mirabella, and she is an elemental, so she can control earth, air, fire, water, and the weather. Normal elementals can only control one of those, but she is like the strongest elemental ever, basically, so she can control them all. And she's the big sister. She's the oldest one. She's the only one who has any memory of her sisters when they're small, because they're separated so that they can be trained and then, you know, meet each other again and kill each other. It would be too mean otherwise. So, but she remembers them and she still loves them. She's very protective. She has, and she's been raised and groomed to be the queen because she is so strong. Everyone thinks that she will win. Even the church, the reigning religion of the island, has backed her. So she has maybe the most austere exterior. She was the hardest one for me as an author to get to know, because she kept her feelings very hidden and she kept things very contained. But as she goes through the series, I learned a lot more about her, and I really love her. She really had a chance to shine in the last two books. The middle triplet is Arsinoe. She's a naturalist, so she can make things grow and can call an animal familiar. Arsinoe is really scrappy. She has been raised by the naturalist, and naturalist queens don't usually win. They just, when somebody can, you know, light you on fire and you can just aggressively grow corn, it's not looking good for you. So they raised her really kindly and with a lot of love, because they wanted to have a very good 16 years, because they figured that's all she's going to have. So she's bitter about that, understandably so. She feels kind of, you know, like she's just being led to slaughter. And she doesn't even want to be queen. She just wants a way out. And she realizes that there may be no way out. And then the youngest triplet is Catarine, and she is a poisoner. The poisoners are the ruling class. The last three queens to win have been poisoners. So she's immune to all toxins, and she's an expert assassin. And she loves poison, and she loves eating poison food. So Catarine is the smallest sister, but she's also the most eager to please. All Catarine really wants is to make the poisoners proud. She's been very abused by them. Her gift is very weak, so they've been poisoning her to try to strengthen it. But she also comes into her own. These girls start very much as pawns, and they end up running the game. When people tell me, though, like you were saying, which queen is their favorite, it is like a personality test. So if they say Catarine is their favorite, the poisoners are their favorite, it's a Slytherin thing to say, you know, kind of like Hogwarts houses.
Yeah, I had my favorite, but then I was thinking if I say my favorite, then everybody's analyzing me, and I'm gonna then everybody's gonna put on my face. Well, that means that you are. But it is true. I mean, you do, as we go through, we have our favorites. And then, of course, we have other characters like, how are you pronouncing it, Peter?
I say Peter.
You just say Peter. I wasn't sure if you did.
I just say Peter.
I say Peter. That's what I was. I wasn't sure if you were saying it differently, but I was just saying Peter. What the heck? Anyway, I like the name Peter, so that's what I was calling him. And I thought, you know, again, this was a character that you brought into the story, and you know, people, I think, also got a lot out of him too.
Yeah, he was a surprise. I was never quite sure what Peter was up to, because he has a heart and he has a conscience, but he's always going to be looking out for number one.
Yeah.
So he was a very, very fun character to write and very fun to work with.
Wow. Isn't it? I just love when an author is talking about her characters like they are real, because they are real. And the wonderful thing is, for fans, even years after they finish a series like this, they remember the characters. And as you said, some people dress up as the characters, and they just becomes part of their own memory, and their sort of how they look at things, and I think it's terrific what you've done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we're readers, right? So when we think about our favorite books or your favorite authors and characters, like they're very real to us as readers. Like if somebody insults my favorite book character, I'm almost more offended than if they insulted me personally.
Yeah,
characters become very real.
I'm like that too. It's so funny. I get so personally involved with the characters that I love, and they stayed with me, you know, all of my life. Even the ones that I read when I was very young, but in essence, although there's this idea of death and of somebody ruling, what do you hope people will come away from your stories thinking or feeling?
I hope they, you know, that it's satisfying, that it was a good journey. I hope that they finished the book and cared about some of the people in it, and that they had a good time while they were reading. That's really all I can hope for, is that they thought it was a good book and enjoyed their time on Fenburn.
Well, I think they have, and of course you never know. They might actually pick this up. This would also make an interesting streaming video series, and you have a lot of interesting aspects here. You never know, right?
Right, yeah. Well, it's in development with Fox.
Oh, it is. See, I didn't know that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, I will, because as I'm reading it, I was thinking to myself, yeah, you know, if I was somebody out there in Hollywood, like I was one time, I would say, yeah, you know, pick up this book and let's run with it, because it's, you're always looking for something original and something that's very photogenic. Also, we have a lot of things in the story that really will look great on screen. And I'm glad that you have something in development, because I really wish you a lot of luck with it. I think, as I said, it's a fascinating series. You've done a great job. And what's the next series? Are you going to work now in a standalone or a series?
Next time it's a standalone. Yeah, I'm taking a break from series. And my next book won't come out until 2021. I needed some time to recover.
Yeah.
So it was going to be a slight delay.
It was a big thing. But it's really so exciting. And I want to just tell my readers that you are a number one New York Times bestselling author. And you've had absolutely fantastic reviews. And Kendara, what's your website?
It's KendaraBlake.com.
Okay. And spelt with an E at the end of, that's why I wasn't sure. Anyway, Kendara, I think you've done a great job, and I really want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. I look forward
thank
to having you,
so you
back
having
in 2021, and you deserve a rest.
Thank you.
Do you ever get back up to Minnesota, up to that? You know, it's so nice and quiet up there. I recently went to New York City, and I realized it is so noisy in New York City.
Oh, yeah, it's constantly noisy. Yeah, I do get back to Minnesota. My parents still live there, and I still have family there. My husband's family is still there, so we get back every couple of years, but we refuse to go in the winter. So there's like a blackout period for Minnesota. It's pretty much from like the mid-November until spring, we just don't go.
Yeah, I know. I make my family come down here. I say, okay, I can't do it. You know, it's so funny. I was born in a blizzard, but I can't handle snow anymore. I can't go through it. I don't enjoy it. So
not anymore.
No.
It's pretty, but I mean, I don't want to drive in it ever again if I can avoid it.
Oh, I know. And it's so funny. When we were kids, we just loved it. The more the better. And my brother still loves it. He called me the other weekend, and he's so happy. And when he calls me and he's really happy, I said, "It snowed, didn't it?" He said, "Yes, it snowed. It's snow. There's snow on the ground." And he's happy. The earlier the snow comes and the later it stays, he is a happy guy. So,
Oh, no.
I know. Isn't it funny? Anyway, I'm here in Florida. That's why I'm here in Florida, because I can't take it anymore. But I do want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Kendara Blake. And you have a really interesting website and a blog. People can go there. Of course, your books are available wherever books are sold. And the new book is called Five Dark Fates, and it's fascinating. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye, Kendara.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, wow. She is interesting. Boy, I tell you, I don't know. I really admire these authors who can really develop an entire world through four books. I mean, that's a lot of work. And they're big books that you get a lot for your bang for your buck in this. They're like 430-page books. But once you get involved with this storyline, you just go through them and you say, "Oh, that wasn't so much." That was it's always exciting when you're reading books and you absolutely forget that you're actually reading. You're in the story. And so I can see why Fox has picked this up. I think it's going to be, we're going to see it probably in a year or two, right there on streaming video. Oh, isn't that exciting? Okay, well, we're going to take a commercial break. And when I come back, I'm going to be talking to a real, real wonderful cozy mystery writer, Kathy Ace. And she is she writes mysteries and she's fun. Be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Oh, wow. I love her name, and I love her title. It's so wonderful to welcome to Joy on Paper, Kathy Ace, crime writer. Hi, Kathy. Isn't that fun?
That's my crime writer laugh coming in for you.
I love it. Oh, I think it's wonderful. Hi, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing surprisingly well. I've just managed to get over my jet lag after a trip to Australia. So, for me, it's 7:30 in the morning, and this is the earliest I've been up in the past week.
So, to Australia. Oh, that must have been a fun trip.
It was a fantastic trip. I'd never been before. We went on a cruise ship. We sailed across the equator. It was all so exciting. I'm beside myself, actually, and I really would like to do it again. But that's the thing with the trip of a lifetime. It's the trip of a lifetime, and you've got to drink in every moment while you can.
Wow. So going across the ocean first, that part's exciting. Then getting to Australia, I bet along the way you thought of a lot of great crimes.
You know, funnily enough, I did. Isn't that a dreadful thing?
I'm there
wandering the streets of Papeete in Tahiti, and I'm thinking, this would be a fabulous place to kill somebody. And Bora Bora with those little houses on stilts out in the fabulous lagoon, don't get me started. It was littered with corpses in my head by the time I'd left.
That's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. Well, you know, when you were here and I met you at BouchaCon, it was such a thrill for me.
Well, you yourself, Patsy, you are such a bundle of energy and such a live wire. You're an incredibly inspiring and motivating person. It would take that to get me up at 7:30 in the morning, West Coast time, this week. I tell you that honestly.
Well, I'm glad I did, because we're going to see each other again soon.
We are in Dallas.
Wow.
Yay.
Isn't that going to be fun?
What? It is. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm very excited that I've been asked to moderate a panel, the theme of which is all the single ladies, which means that we're going to have a chance to talk about the sleuths, those strong female sleuths, who nonetheless are able to find themselves a man while they also solve the mystery. So I'm looking forward to moderating that. And I also get the chance to take part in that wonderful speed dating event that they hold at BouchaCon, where you run from table to table of readers and pitch your work to them. It's incredibly uplifting, energizing, and ultimately exhausting. So I'll gird my loins for that one as well.
Well, and you were so good at it, and you gave everybody at the table such great gifts. Most people didn't give anything. You're giving tea towels and all sorts of.
Welsh are like that.
That's
we've got to give. If we can't feed people, we at least have to give them a gift. I mean, my natural aim is to feed everyone I meet, but that's not always possible, especially when you're flying from Canada into the States. food, taking lots of food like Welsh cakes is just not logical. So tea towels.
No, they'll stop you and they'll say, "What's in those tea?"
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
And next thing you know, you're being searched by some strange people.
And one doesn't want that. I mean, I write crime fiction. I don't actually want to ever undertake any real criminal activity because I do believe that the forces of law and order are, in fact, a tad more bright than many authors would draw them in their own characterization. So, no criminal activity, just fictional criminal thoughts from me.
Well, it's going to be fun to be in Dallas. I lived for many years in Houston, and my boys were born in Houston, and so it's fun for me. I haven't been back to Texas for a long time, and I do love Texas.
Oh, will you be naturally yee-hawing as you drive back in then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It's funny, when I arrived in Texas, I had been living in England for many years. I think I told you that I had a cottage there, and I lived in England. And I had when I got to Texas, everybody said, you're so British. You have such a British accent, which I was very happy about. I loved it. But then by the time I left, everybody said I sounded Texan. So, but it's fun. And Dallas is particularly it's an enjoyable place to be. And it's going to be fun. Rhinestones.
I'm looking forward to it. My only knowledge of Dallas is as a traveler who has changed planes there. So all I've seen is the airport.
And, of course, the TV show and JR. And it's so funny. When my husband and I lived in Europe, they were running Dallas in Europe. And so my husband wore a cowboy hat all the time. And so wherever we went, he was treated so nicely. We would get the best table in all the restaurants.
Excellent.
And they even allowed us, because of his cowboy hat, they let us go into the Ritz Hotel to use their restrooms. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yes, it's very nice. So it was really great. Well, of course, you're going to be there talking about Sleuths, and let's talk a little bit about your two main series. I love the Wise Inquiries Agency Mysteries. Tell us about the Wise. Why? Where did you get that name? Tell us about how that came about.
Well, it's interesting, actually. The World Cup in rugby is playing at the moment in Japan. Excuse me one second. Oh, I'm so sorry. I came back from my cruise with the most horrible cold. But anyway, and I grew up in Wales, being Welsh. And for us, rugby is, well, it's not as important as breathing. It's probably more important than breathing. And we always used to have the Home Nations Championship each year, which was Wales, Ireland, Scotland and England all playing against each other in rugby. It's now grown beyond that, but as a child, therefore, I grew up with WISE, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, England, and I thought it would be fun to create a private investigator character from each of those four home nations and to throw them together as a working group where certainly their talents work synergistically in that they act as a team much greater than the sum of any of the parts, but also bearing in mind the very natural tensions that exist between those home nations, where Wales, Ireland, Scotland and England all like to have a bit of a dig at each other, and to allow that to play out within a group of women who were at the heart of everything good friends because they'd been tested by fire when they first met, but also knew that they were all living a life they couldn't live otherwise because of the other three. And the Wise women came together in my head that way. Each of them a very different character, but together representing the strengths and the differences of those four home nations.
Well, I love them. I can't decide which is my favorite, although I'm very partial to Christine, who is the Irish one, and she has a sort
Christine
of
Christine who truly believes she is immortal.
Yeah.
Because when you're beautiful and you're the daughter of an Irish Viscount and intelligent, why wouldn't you think you're also immortal?
That's right. And wealthy. So, yeah.
Well, yes. But to be fair, you know, it's made money, not inherited money. So that's good. I don't have a favorite of the four. But I will share with you a secret. I absolutely adore the Dowager Duchess Althea Twist.
Oh, I love that.
She's not really a private investigator. She's the irritating sleuth helper who tends to get herself into more trouble than she helps them out of. And I do adore her as a character. I wanted a pixie-like character with dimples and a wicked love for Monty Python. And an 18-year-old Dowager Duchess seemed just the right character to inject that into.
Oh, I tell you, the case of the Dottie Dowager is one of my favorite cozy mysteries. Absolutely. I love that.
Oh, that is fantastic. Thank you.
I love that. I'm partial to the Dowager, ever since I read, Peter Wimsey's stories and his mother. I love this character. Absolutely wonderful. The series is delightful. And how many books in that series now?
There are four in that series. I'm actually working on plotting out a fifth, but it's remaining at four at the moment because, as I think you know, I had a bit of a switch from the cozy private investigators who inhabit a fabulous imaginary stately home in Wales to this year. The book that I brought out was much darker psychological suspense novel, The Wrong Boy. That's right, yes. Set in a clifftop village, also in Wales, but a much darker place inhabited by people, seemingly each of whom has a secret. Surprise, surprise.
Well, I want to add one thing about all you rugby lovers. Rugby has taken over the sports network here, and I really irritating for somebody who loves soccer and wants to see Harry Kane all the time.
Oh dear. Yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Patsy. You're just going to have to put those needs on hold for a little while.
I know.
While the rest of us get our rugby fixed. And what a rugby World Cup is turning out to be. It's quite astonishing. We were very fortunate on the cruise ship that we were on. They actually were showing the rugby, and there was a really good game between Wales and Australia. And since the ship was sailing to Australia, there were over 1,000 Australians on it, and I think my husband and I were about the only purebred Welsh on there. So we had to shout really loud when they were showing the rugby and Wales was playing Australia.
Uh-huh.
It was a great form of camaraderie, but I'm sure the soccer will be back for you very soon.
I hope so. I can't live too long without Harry Kane. I just, he's so wonderful. So
you should probably have that scene too, you know.
Yeah, I would love to see him. That's I need a trip to England to meet him. He has to write a book, and then I could send him a ticket, and he could come here, and I could interview him right
that
here.
That would be a very good excuse. Yes.
Yeah, that's a business expense.
Ha. It is. You could write that off.
Exactly. That's what I have to do. He has to write a book, and I'll send him a ticket, and he can come right here to Clearwater, Florida, and I can enjoy having him here in the studio. Whew, wouldn't that be fun?
I'm not saying a word.
No,
you see how good I was?
I saw that. Now, we're going to mention your other series, too, because I want people to know that, you are a real crime writer. And let's talk about Kate Morgan. I love this series, too.
Oh, thank you very much indeed. I do my very best to keep crime readers as busy as I can, all on my own. But I like Kate Morgan as well. I will admit, the first novel I ever had published was the first in the Kate Morgan mystery series. There are eight of those now. And I think that probably when it comes to creating characters on the page, of all the characters I've ever created, Kate Morgan is the closest to myself. She's a Welsh woman, Welsh Canadian. Canada. Yes, she's a Welsh woman who's moved to Canada exactly like me. When I started writing the book, I was teaching at university, which is what she does. I taught business courses, whereas she is a professor of criminal psychology. And that, of course, was my device to allow her to find contact with crime. Because when you're writing a sleuth, as opposed to professional private investigators, it's a bit of a challenge always to bring that sleuth into contact with a dead body, because you either face the challenge of, you know, Cabot Cove syndrome, where, frankly, you don't want to go to that place on the map, like Midsummer Murders, you know, avoid Badger's Drift at all costs. Or you end up with a character who's a bit like Typhoid Mary. You need to know her travel plans in advance so you can plan to not go where she's going, because somebody's bound to be dead within 2 minutes of her arriving there. So I set Kate off around the world, avoiding Cabot Cove syndrome, but it does mean that wherever the book is set is going to experience some unpleasantness. And having traveled a lot throughout my whole life, I do make sure that she travels a good deal. Each book is set in a different country, and that means at least I've spread the corpses around the world as much as I possibly can.
Oh, it's so much fun to be an author, isn't it?
Do you know, it really is. I blog every other week at something called Seven Criminal Minds, and I like to get my blog posts written a little ahead of time. And there's one coming up which asks us to address the question of, does writing interfere with your personal life? And I've rewritten that blog 3 times now, and I just sound like a whiny little child every time I write it, because, yes, of course the writer's life interferes with my personal life. It gets in the way of family events and all sorts of things. But ultimately, it's the best job in the world. Any job gets in the way of family life at some point or another. And given that I can pretty much choose when I do what I do, even if that means I'm writing at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can do that. But it really is the best job in the world. I am so fantastically fortunate to get to do what I do, that I'm actually, when I come to write the final version of the blog, I think it's just going to be about 4 lines, the last one of which will be, so shut up your whining, Kathy, and get on with it. Because I couldn't be luckier, frankly.
Well, and just being a writer, it enhances your life, and it also enhances the lives of the people around you, because if you're talking about your characters, you're talking about your stories, or you're doing research, and they're learning along with you too, and I think that's a wonderful thing. It expands their minds.
You know, that is such a lovely thing to say, because I will admit that in all of my books, but particularly maybe the Kate Morgan mysteries, I've got the opportunity to share my passion for other things like art, architecture, history, food. I get a chance to share all of those with my readers in a very sneaky way, in that, of course, Kate's dealing with a different culture each time. So I get a chance to have her experience that culture, and that experience through her is passed to the readers. And I'm so pleased that you pick up on that, because as a writer, sharing that passion that I have with people for those other elements, rather than just, you know, poisons and methods of killing people, that sharing those other passions is so important to me. And I'm really pleased that that comes off the page. I really am. Thank you.
Well, it does. It definitely does. And that's why I think, I like when a mystery or any book has depth to it. It's not just, as you said, it's not just a body. It's not just the mystery. It has a full story behind it. So you really get a feeling of the place and the time and the people. And you do a terrific job with the Kate Morgan series.
Thank you. I thank you for that, because, yes, the hard part of being a writer is not just putting enough words end to end so that they make up a book, but that they are essentially telling a good story beyond the main plot. And I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So, okay. Now, at BoucherCon, you're going to be talking about sleuth characters. Writers, tell us some of your favorite authors.
Oh my goodness me! Well, it's probably it's, I am tempted to tell you a list of dead people, because I know so many living authors that if I list some of them,
oh, they'll get
and
mad.
Leave out others.
Then
they won't get mad. Bless their hearts. No, they will not get mad. Do you know why? We're not in competition with each other. We all know we cannot write enough books ourselves individually to feed the voracious appetite of readers. So we're not in competition with each other. That's not the case. But there are certain authors who, frankly, don't need my promotion and backing because they're so big and famous and doing so well, whose books are the hardbacks I'll buy each year. I really don't buy many hardcover books. I buy so many books, I'd rather buy 3 or 4 paperbacks than a hardback. And I do find when I'm traveling that my Kindle becomes my best friend, in that I can take hundreds of books with me wherever I'm going. But I am a huge fan of what might surprise you as roughy-tufty writers, Lee Child and Martina Cole, for example. I mean, Lee Child, you know, quite a bit of the book is taken up with descriptions of physical fights. And Martina Cole, I think each book should probably come with a language warning, although, frankly, if you just read the first page of any Martina Cole book, you're never going to be in any doubt that there's strong language in there. So they do give you an out fairly quickly. But there are other authors who I have met and discovered their work through BoucherCon, and they might not have come on my radar otherwise. Ilsa Gifdadottir is the Icelandic Queen of Crime. Again, they're very dark books, and they're very unsettling books. On the lighter side, there is the delightful private investigator from Katrina McPherson, the Scottish 1920s, 1930s books. But she's also now writing some very good, darker standalone books, which I very much enjoy. And Hallie Efron, every time she has a book out, I've got to get it, because they are just incredibly well written, and they take you on a wonderful journey of multi-layered discovery. I also tend towards, being Welsh, I do like Welsh books, and there are more Welsh crime writers than you might think exist. And rather than listing them, I would just encourage you to check out a website called Crime Cymru, that's C-R-I-M-E, and then the Welsh word for Wales, which is C-Y-M-R-U, Cymru. And there we formed a little collective of a few dozen authors who are Welsh or else set their crime writing in Wales. And if anybody's interested in particularly that Welsh aspect, that would be a great resource for them to go to, Crime Cymru. And once you've checked that out, check out the website for Crime Writers of Canada, because I live in a very polite nation, but there is some fabulous crime fiction coming out of it as well.
Okay, well, they should also check out your website, which is Kathy Ace. And Kathy spelt with a C, the old-fashioned way. I like it. And you have a beautiful signature.
I'll thank my parents for that one.
It's really great. Well, I look forward to seeing you at BoucherCon. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And
thank you very much.
Okay. So again, bye-bye now and see you soon.
See you in Dallas.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I have a few minutes. I just want to say, while you are listening to this, I am already in Dallas and having a fun time meeting all of the authors, so many of them whom I bring to you, and it's always exciting to participate in an event like this and to be able to meet the authors and to talk to them about how they develop characters. And the more I talk to authors, I really want to tell all of you, there are a couple of tricks to becoming a better author and becoming a better writer. And I was talking to an author just last week. If you have written anything, you should really stop and just, when you're editing, first of all, I hope all of you are printing out your work. Do not just edit from on the screen and think that that's the way to do it. It doesn't work. You have to print it out. But you should also print out your paragraphs sentence by sentence. so that you can analyze how you can make them better. There are so many ways. In screenwriting, we call it spiff and punch. You spiff up a sentence. You take one sentence and you play with it. You might rewrite it three times. And this happens with all the great authors. I mean, some of them, and David Baldacci told me, and I think Brad Meltzer, that they've worked for hours, days, on that first page, going through every word over and over until they're sure that it has that spiff and punch, that it grabs you, and that the words connect with you, and it might not, you know, I get a little bit frustrated when I get a book and I realize that the author has not worked on that first page. The story might be great. The storyline is great. I love the story. I already might like the characters. But I realize that if I'm reading it and I say to myself, ooh, I could write that sentence better, that's not a good thing. I don't want to get books where I say, oh, I mean, it's like, you're reading Jane Austen. There's not a line in Jane Austen that you would want to rewrite. It's as simple as that. Or Charlotte Bronte, The Professor. If you haven't read that book, you really should read that book. I think that book, actually, I think it's Bronte's best book. Each sentence in that book is perfection. I've been studying it. I've been analyzing. I've been trying to think, and this is a book, most of you have not read it. It's called The Professor, and it was not published in her lifetime. It was rejected. And when you read this book, you say, my goodness, how could anybody reject this book? Because every single sentence, every single word in that book is pure perfection. And that's what you want when people read your work. You don't want anybody saying, oh, I could do it better. So it's up to you to keep trying, keep improving. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken about in an audible book, or to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping, and having my fingers crossed for Carol J. Perry, because I think her Witch City Mysteries are ideal for the Hallmark Channel. They would be perfect, and she's got so many books now. I can't believe it. In 4.5 years, she's written so many books, and it would be exciting to see her books on television, and that's what we need. We need a new series, something new and interesting, and I hope that you will read her books. It's coming up Halloween. She was born on Halloween Eve, and all of her books are available at Barnes & Noble on the end cap. My goodness, she is so doing so well, and I hope you'll read her. So, and make sure you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Baguette in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye.